Today's Taisho is on case 48 in the Momonkan. Case 48 is entitled Kenpo's One Road. A monk said to Kenpo Osho, "It is written, Bhagavat's in the 10 directions, one straight road to nirvana. I wonder where that road can be." Kenpo lifted his staff, drew a line, and said, "Here it is." Later, the monks asked the same question of Umon, who held up his fan and said, "This fan jumps up to the 33rd heaven and hits the nose of the deity Sakra Devanam Indra. When you strike the carp of the eastern sea, the rain comes down in torrents." Mumon's comment, one, going to the bottom of the sea, lifts up clouds of dust. The other, on top of the highest mountain, raises towering waves to wash the sky. One holding fast, the other letting go, each stretches out his hand to support the profound teaching. They are just like two riders starting from opposite ends of the course and meeting in the middle. But none on earth can be direct absolutely. When examined with a true eye, neither of these true great masters knows the road. Mumon's verse, "Before a step is taken, the goal is reached. Before the tongue is moved, the speech is finished." Though each move is ahead of the next, there is still a transcendent secret. Well, this is the first day of our spring sesshin. This beautiful weather, amazing weather. We all got up and came into the Zendo today. And it's possible that your sit went like this. You got up, you came into the Zendo, you were a little sleepy, you sat down on the cushion, and you started watching your breath or calling Mu. Your mind became calm. You began to feel this deep sense of stillness. And you began to feel a sense of connectedness, and then you felt the boundary between yourself and the world dissolving. You heard the distant sound of cars, you became one with the sound of cars, and so on. And then the bell rings and it's time to go to breakfast. You got up thinking, "Oh, this zazen is wonderful." Could have been like that, right? Okay. Now here's another way it could have been. You came in, you sat down on the cushion, and you were tired and groggy, and then you started thinking about something that was bothering you. Or maybe, you didn't even know it was bothering you till you came to Sesshin and you sat down on the cushion, and you keep trying to focus on your breath, or you keep trying to concentrate on the moment, or on your koan, but your mind drifts off, and it gets quickly tangled up in these issues that are just bubbling up to the surface, and you keep coming back to the breath, and at some point you realize that your legs hurt, and you're tired, and you think to yourself, "Why did I come here?" And so on, and then the bell rings and it's time for breakfast. So you might have had the first scenario, you might have had the second scenario, or you might have been somewhere in between. Those are both possibilities. You know. One thing I often say to people, and I don't think you can say it too much, is that Zen is not about bliss. You know, sometimes we do encounter like real heaven on the cushion, you know. But the practice of Zazen is about being in the moment and confronting or being one with whatever is happening in the moment. And usually, although it's not always true, usually we can't predict what's going to happen in the moment. Usually we can't predict. So a friend of mine at work is a really wonderful woman, and she's going through a very difficult time. She's getting a divorce. This is always sad. She got married maybe 5 years ago. I knew her as a graduate student. She's finished her PhD now. She works in the writing program. And, you know, she had met this wonderful man, and, you know, she had high hopes for her life. And they had a wedding, a beautiful wedding. They had a lovely honeymoon. I think they went to Mexico. They have two kids. And now, you know, she came in to see me on Friday, and she was just so despondent, you know, because, you know, she is getting, she said, my husband and I, we just can't go on, you know, we're getting a divorce, and it had turned into a really messy divorce, you know. Apparently her husband blames her, she's trying to be mature about it. And you know, at one point he threatened to take the kids away, and she was very frightened that she would lose her own children, And then the lawyer said, well, you know, pretty much everybody in a couple, every man in a couple who's going through this makes that threat. But anyway, my friend was really distressed, and you know, the thing that is so difficult about life is that we can't really foresee what's going to happen next, right? You know, we start out down a certain road, and we wind up in another place, which we just didn't expect, you know. And usually it's not just unexpected, it's that sometimes we ourselves have changed, you know. You know, so you know, basically, this my friend, she said, you know, I thought I knew what, I think this is one of the things that was bothering her so much. She said, I thought I knew what I wanted in my life. I thought I knew. She said, but it turns out not to be what I wanted, you know. And she had many problems with guilt. She was feeling very guilty about getting a divorce. You know, her children wouldn't have their father living there. She kind of felt like she was sacrificing her children for her own happiness and so on. So all these like skeletons came up as she was just talking to me. And I thought this was such a poignant scene because, you know, her suffering was so obvious. And we've all suffered like that in life. You know, we can readily appreciate her unhappiness because, you know, we've all, you know, people start out wanting to do one thing, and then they start doing it, and they realize this isn't what I wanted, you know. And this can be in a relationship, like a marriage. It can be in a job. It can be in a career choice, you know. You have an image of how the future is supposed to be, and then it doesn't go that way, right? And so, you know, basically, this is sort of what life can be like, you know. When you come to Sashin and you sit down on the cushion, you know, we have an image of how things are supposed to be. So you're going to come in, you're going to sit down on the cushion, you're going to watch your breath, and you're going to become one with the marvelous world around you on a beautiful spring day. And that can happen. And when it happens, it's absolutely fantastic, right? And it's like, wow, what a break. But sometimes when we sit down on the cushion, we have work to do, you know? Because there are things in our life that are not as we want them to be. And for some reason, you know, they're right there on the cushion waiting for us, you know. So we sit down on the cushion and immediately encounter something that we maybe didn't want to face. And maybe we didn't know we would have to face it. You know, so you come to Sashin, You sit down on the cushion and all of a sudden you realize something. You know, I don't know what it is, but you realize something. And it's nagging at you. Right? It's nagging at you. Now, you could say, well, this is not what I signed up for. You know, but actually, this is so good. This is such a good moment. This is the moment when real Zen practice can take place. Because, you know, even though it is true that people, after a lot of sitting, can be free from their obstacles and be one with the world, sometimes it's necessary for us to confront things we might not have confronted until we sat down on the cushion. You know, I have a friend who's like very, very busy person. You know, this person keeps busy all the time. And the person's constantly doing this and doing that. And I have the feeling, I don't know, but I have the feeling this is how that person avoids certain kinds of difficulties, you know. When she had a parent who has been very difficult to care for and work with, and I noticed she was really cleaning up her house and painting all the walls, and I think that was her way maybe of dealing with the problem, but also maybe not. Maybe that was her way of sort of like avoiding confronting certain things, you know. It's just like staying chronically busy. So one of the one aspect of Zen practice is that we're running through our lives. We're busy, and you go to work, you come home, you watch the television, you go to sleep, you get up, you hit the road, you get to work, and it's possible to go through your life without facing certain kinds of important issues, you know. And then one day, maybe you realize you've awakened with a stranger in your bed, and you say, "How did this happen?" But it was happening; you just weren't paying attention, you know. So basically, Zen practice is kind of like paying attention. So you come in and you sit down on the cushion, and lo and behold, there it is facing you. And you have to, you know, you can try to avoid it, but, you know, as a practice, Zen is about, you know, stopping and seeing. You know, so in a busy world where we're all running around, we come in, we sit down on the cushion, and basically we face we might face whatever has been sort of locked away from view, not allowed to be seen, and you suddenly there it is, and maybe it's a fear, maybe it's a feeling of loneliness, maybe it's anger, some kind of anger, maybe it's something else. You know, usually it's not just one of those things; it might be some combination of things. Those are all possible, you know. Love, you know, you can sit down on the cushion and just suddenly feel yourself gushing love, you know. But something is coming out, probably as you're working with your koan or you're watching your breath. And facing that is really what Zen is all about. You know, what do I mean by facing it? You sit down on the cushion, and you start thinking about something that happened a few days ago. And you suddenly realize that you're angry about it, you know? And you suddenly realize, gee, I'm really angry about that. Well, this is a wonderful opportunity, right? Really wonderful. And you come back to your koan, or you come back to your breath, and little by little, you know, you begin to have more perspective on your situation, you know. Something you maybe didn't want to look at all has suddenly confronted you. And you stay with your breath, or you stay with mu, in order to keep your balance, your psychological balance. to be grounded in the breath or be grounded in emptiness. And you come back and you might not know where this anger is coming from, you know, or where this anxiety is coming from. But you keep going back to your breath, and little by little you begin to, maybe it's like you begin to see the sources of these fears, the sources of this anger, you know. And you see what triggered it. You might be able to have some sense of you know, like things in the past that have produced this response, you know. It takes a lot of courage to look in this way, to keep working with the with whatever is coming out on the cushion. You know, this practice can be a little bit like the practice of therapy, you know. When you go to see a therapist, you're asking somebody to help you in a special way. You're asking somebody to have like a exterior perspective. You know, and this is incredibly valuable. You know, therapy, I think, is a very wonderful practice because we get caught in our heads, right? We get trapped in our own habitual mental states. And we can't get out, you know, so we just keep repeating, you know, repeating. And you go to a therapist and, you know, if you form a bond with your therapist, you now have somebody who's got a different perspective on your situation. It's like an outside vantage point. You know, so you might say to your therapist, well, you know, I feel like I have done a bad thing, you know. And even though the therapist might just say, well, do you think you did a bad thing? Having an outside perspective helps you to see it in a new light. It's like you can step out of your own head and see yourself through somebody else's eyes. And it's very, very liberating to do that. It's really very helpful. You know, most people get trapped in habitual ways of thinking. And these can cause a lot of emotional distress. And so, you know, you keep trying to get out, but you keep repeating the same mental patterns, you know. And so when you go to a therapist, the therapist gives you some new ways about thinking, new ways to think about what you have been obsessed with. And it's like it breaks you out of the trap. It breaks you out of those habitual patterns. Well, I think Zazen is very much like that. I think Zazen uses the mind of Mu, you could say, to also break you out of the trap, you know. So you sit down on the cushion, and you maybe you have a problem at work. You know, I have a coworker who really did something to hurt me recently. This person made a false accusation against me to one of my higher-ups. And the higher-up came to see me. This really happened. And has a great good opinion of me. And said, listen, I have to ask you this question, but this person has made this accusation against you. And I provided the evidence that this person investigating me required, you know, to resolve the matter, and I hadn't done anything wrong, but I was falsely accused. You know, I sat down on the cushion, and I have to tell you the truth. When I sat down on the cushion, I went through a range of emotions, right? I mean, I was watching my breath and entering Mu, and I suddenly realized that I was really hurt, you know. But beyond that, I really was mad. I was angry at this person. And I wanted, you know, to be honest with you, I wanted to retaliate in some way. And then, you know, I also felt fear, right? Because this is somebody who was trying to hurt me. And so, you know, I went through like a range of these emotions, you know, hurt feelings, somebody I trusted violated my trust. You know, then I realized I was really mad. I wanted to, like, lob a nuclear bomb over at this person's office, you know. Fortunately, I don't have a nuclear bomb, so... I was also fearful because this person's still running around saying bad things about me. You know, this is like a really human situation, right? This is something that could happen in any kind of a workplace environment. And so I had to really sit with that for a while. And then basically I decided that the best solution was to... I realized when I began to go over the past how I might have offended this person without intending to. And I wrote this person an email and I said, I would really like to go to lunch with you. And I said, I suspect you're mad at me because of this, you know. And I said, I didn't mean to leave you out. You know, it wasn't my purpose. And I can see, though, how from your perspective, it might have seemed like I was trying to shut you out. And so I said, you know, I talked about what I was trying to accomplish, and I said, you know, I didn't mean to hurt you. And I got a very nice email back from this person saying, yes, I'd like to go to lunch. So this was a person who basically, really tried to hurt me. And I think the person did it because she was feeling that I had, done something bad to her, and I hadn't intended to. And I worked through all of this on the cushion and came up with this wonderful idea of sending an email and trying to mend fences instead of lobbing a nuclear bomb. You know, this was all something I learned on the cushion, right? You know, coming back to Mu helped me to work through this issue, you know. It helped me to face it, and it helped me to see my own responses. And it also let me break out of my habitual patterns, you know. And I have habitual patterns like anybody else. When I'm hurt, I want to hit back, you know. Or I want to withdraw, you know. So one of my tendencies in a case like this would be to be very cold to this person. You know, I would just sort of like, hello, you know, and like, you've done me a big injury, and I'm going to be passive aggressive about it, you know. But instead, I think reaching out to this person is not just good for me, it's probably good for her. So, you know, this might not work. We could go to lunch and next week she could do something else, you know, to try to hurt me. But it's worth a try. My Zen practice has helped me to get out of some of my habitual patterns, right? You know, and we can't really do this with our conscious mind. You know, the conscious mind can't really accomplish this. You know, it's like, tell me something you don't know. You can't do it. And if I say, I'd like you to think in a totally new way, you can't do it. You know, you're trained to think, you've trained yourself to think in certain habitual ways. It's like when you have a problem, you reach into your toolbox and you just pull out the same old tools. So Zen practice is a different kind of approach to a problem. Because if you quote-unquote know what you're doing, you don't know what you're doing, if I may put it that way. In other words, when we think we know what we're doing, we're just repeating what we've already done again and again. So, you know, we can't really, when we know what we're doing, learn anything new or get out of our habitual patterns, you know. I have a friend of mine who has been teaching pretty much the same material year after year for, I guess, 20 years, you know. And the person is incredibly learned and incredibly knowledgeable about his field. But I wonder if I wonder how he does it. Really, I wonder how he keeps it fresh. You know, when I teach, I like to use new material that I haven't taught before as often as I can, and it's always a little bit scary. You know what I mean? So you bring in something new, and you don't know if it's going to work or not with your students. You know. You try. You might find it really exciting, and you might think, "Oh, this is going to be a big hit," you know. And you bring it in, and you find people really don't like it. Or you can find some. You can bring in something, a piece of something to read and discuss, and it can produce so many unexpected responses. And I think that the art of being a good teacher is the art of having a very long fuse, or a very great tolerance for uncertainty. You know, if you bring something into the classroom that students are going to read and discuss, and you've done it 50 times before, I think it's very hard to have a fresh perspective. All you're bringing them is what you already know. But if you create a climate in the classroom of like uncertainty, of real uncertainty, all kinds of wonderful things might happen, and you yourself can learn a lot from people's responses. And this is like this is the ideal teaching situation, where there's a high exposure to uncertainty in the classroom. And you just never know what the students are going to say next. That can be very hair-raising, you know, because people like to control the classroom. Teachers like to control the classroom. But if you really are, just letting it unfold, if you can relax enough to do that, it can be tremendously exciting, you know, tremendously exciting. Sometimes people will say things that are just absolutely, you know, like dropping a bomb in the room. A student will say something, and it's like, almost offensive. But then you get a wonderful response. You know, the ideal classroom isn't one where all the students are taking notes. It's where people are squirming in their chairs and they're agitated. That's perfect. Where they're agitated, they don't look happy. You know, they're squirming in their chairs. You know, I had a discussion this last Thursday, and we were one kid. His name is Miguel. Was looking at me with real anger. You know, I don't know why, but he looked at me and he was staring. I kept looking over and he's staring at me. You know, with anger. I'll figure it out. But you know, those are the best days of teaching, right? Those are the best. The worst teaching situation is where you go in and you lecture or you talk and it's hard to, nobody's engaged, you know. And, you know, at the end of, you wind up having these big gaps. Nobody's taking the bait, you know. That's like a disaster. When you come into a classroom and people are upset or angry or disturbed. They don't know what they're talking about. Somebody says, "I don't know what this means." In exasperation, it's like, hallelujah. You know, that's the best situation. Right? Well, it's the same thing with life. You know, having high levels of control is what is naturally a tendency. You know, the uncertainty is frightening. And the lack of control is frightening, right? But in a way, having everything screwed down tightly makes life very uninteresting, right? When there's a higher degree of uncertainty in life, you can grow and you can learn more, and life becomes more interesting. And it's the same with Zazen. You know, I've had one person in my Zen career, with whom I would say I was a total failure, you know, in a bad way, you know. There was a person who sat in our group for maybe 8 years. And this person would come into the Dogasan room and I'd say, what's happening on the cushion? And the person would say, nothing. And I would say, well, something must be happening. No, nothing's happening. And believe it or not, this person continued to practice Zen for 8 years, but the Dokusan room was always the same. You know, I'd say, tell me about what's happening with your koan. Nothing's happening. And I'd say, well, you know, this person's mother had died not long before, and I gave him a koan, which was, I thought rather close, rather dangerously close to that experience. Nothing. And finally, this person just stopped sitting after many years of determined practice. And I just didn't know how to get that door open, you know. I wanted that person to come in and try to punch me or scream or, you know, nothing. That door was closed so tightly. And that says to me that, you know, that person has something in that room which he does not want to look at, absolutely, unconditionally, you know. So when you sit down on the cushion and something is coming up that bothers you or troubling you, or it could be something that you discover, you know, some of these people come to Sesshin and they suddenly realize, my God, I love my wife, or my God, I love my brother, you know, and that's a discovery too. Right? You know, those are wonderful moments. So coming to Sesshin and sitting down on the cushion and finding that there's a little sand in your eye, you know, there's something troubling you or something bothering you, this is exactly what should be happening if it's happening. You know, if you came in this morning and you sat down on the cushion and it was bliss, well, don't worry. Congratulations. That's not a problem. But if you came in and you sat down on the cushion and you began to feel uneasy about something or troubled about something, that's really an optimal situation, right? That's really the best possible thing that could happen. Because now is your chance to face something that is probably more important than you're allowing yourself to see. You know, it might not be the case, but usually this is the case. So this practice of coming back to the moment and is really quite sophisticated, because we don't, you know, in a certain way, maybe the Zen teacher is a little bit like a therapist, but the real teacher is your own big mind, right? You know, the real teacher is your own big mind, which we normally don't allow ourselves to listen to. You know, we wind up listening to the big mind after we've had some kind of a major crisis. But it doesn't have to get to that point, you know. Maybe you're in a job, you were encouraged to take a job that was the ideal job, and your parents were happy and proud that you took the job, and you're in the job, and by all conventional standards, this is an ideal situation, right? And then, you know, but maybe there's a part of you that throughout this whole thing that's saying, wait a minute, stop, you know, wait. This is not what I want, you know, and you keep squashing that voice, you know, that's like your big mind talking. And you keep squashing. And then, you know, you're 10 years into your job, and then you have some kind of a crisis, personal crisis. And you suddenly realize, wait, I don't want to be here, you know, but you're there. So this is like a huge problem. So learning how to listen to that voice is incredibly important. You know, it's something people don't necessarily want to do. You know, it can be very, very helpful in the short term to be disconnected, to just let the small mind run the show, you know, and to be disconnected from your emotions, your deeper life, and that's commonly how people live, right? So Zen practice is really about connecting to the deeper sources of your intelligence and feeling, and coming into terms with them. And that can be difficult if we are uncomfortable with what we discover. You know, so if you sit down on the cushion and you suddenly feel this powerful anger, that might not be how you want to see yourself, as an angry person. And then as you contemplate what makes you angry, those discoveries too might be difficult to work with, you know. But if you keep grounding yourself in mu, or you ground yourself in the moment, you know, you'll have the mental stability to keep going. And at some point, what might happen to you is that you're troubled, or anxious, or fearful, or angry. And then around day three, you know, you have a breakthrough where you suddenly realize, you know, I'm so happy to be alive. You know, I'm so happy to be alive. This is such a wonderful opportunity, you know. And then you've really worked through this obstacle, and you can go on with your life, you know, with a new wholeness. You know, what tends to make us less happy than we could be is being, you know, having many doors in ourselves closed. And basically being afraid to open them. And in Zen practice, if you open a couple of those doors, you feel more whole. You know, that you can kind of move through the world with fewer reservations, fewer inner obstacles. And doubts and irresolutions vanish. Life in true faith becomes possible. This is what it says in the verses on the heart mind, and it's the heart of our practice, is letting the big mind speak, and hearing the big mind and what it says. And the big mind may say something you don't want to hear at first, but if you listen and you can find a way to come to terms with what it's saying, you can go forward without defeating yourself. You know, so often in life, we're trying to go forward, but part of us is pulling in the other direction, you know, so we're conflicted. You know, we want to go forward, but there's something pulling us back. And so Zen, it makes life difficult to live, right? It makes life difficult to live that way. We feel tired, we're living sort of half-heartedly, living half-heartedly. I think that's a good way to put it. And Zen is about living wholeheartedly. And it's not a matter of just sitting down on the cushion and boom, wholehearted life is there. You have to work for it by facing your obstacles and working them through. And when you work them through, you know, then there's this wonderful joy and a fully integrated life, where the unconscious and the conscious are working together, and there's not this stifling self-doubt or stifling self-discipline. So naturalness becomes possible for a unified mind in accord with the way. Kenpo's One Road. A monk said to Kenpo Osho, "It is written, there are holy ones in the 10 directions." See, this is so often our case, right, in life, where we feel pulled in different directions. There's one person who was coming to Sesshin and at the last minute wasn't able to come to Sesshin. And the person wrote and said, I wanted to come to Shishin, but I also know my job was, I'm afraid I'll be neglecting my job and my family, etc., etc. And I couldn't sleep last night, right? I couldn't sleep. So this is like so, this is a classic human situation, right? Pulled in multiple directions. Something is telling her, go to Shishin. Something is telling her, don't go to Shishin. Something is telling her, etc., see? Basically, I don't know if this person has resolved these issues or not. Probably not. And maybe on this occasion, not coming to Shishin was the right thing to do. Probably, in this case. But there's still unresolved contradictions, right? So part of you is saying go, and part of you is saying stay. If you stay, you haven't solved the problem. There's still the contradiction there. So sooner or later, those contradictions have to be faced, either on the cushion or in some other forum, right? So we all go through these experiences of being pulled in multiple directions. We have to act in a unified way, but we're divided. And so Monk said to Kempo, look, there's holy ones in the 10 directions. If I go east, should I go east? Should I go west? Should I go north? Should I go south? Which is the right road for me to take? Should I go to Shishin or not go to Shishin? Should I take the job or not take the job? See? You teach, Monk said to Kempo, you say there's one road to nirvana. You say there's one road. How can that be? I feel pulled in 10 different directions. Kempo lifted his staff, drew it a line in the air, and said, here's the line. Here's the road. And this is our practice, right? I mean, we sit down on the cushion, and we watch the breath, and then the moment unfolds, and we keep coming back to the moment. And it could be a moment of difficulty, right? You sit down on the cushion, you're pulled in multiple directions, you keep coming back to the breath, back to the moment, and your anxiety increases. You might feel like jumping out of your skin sometime, but you keep coming back to the breath, back to the moment, back to the moment. And little by little, you become aware of what's producing this stress, this contradiction, and little by little you resolve this contradiction into like unified mind. I understand now. And the sign that you're there is the absence of stress, right? Is this feeling of pleasant energy or liberation or calm centeredness. A monk said to Kempo Osho, it is written, Bhagavad's in the 10 directions, one straight road to nirvana. I wonder where the road can be. Kempo lifted his staff, drew a line, and said, here it is. Later, the monks asked the same question to Master Umon, who held up his fan and said, this fan jumps up to the 33rd heaven and hits the nose of the deity Sakra Devanandram Indra. When you strike the carpet of the eastern sea, the rain comes down in torrents. This is another aspect of our practice, which is, first aspect is being in the moment. The second aspect is releasing the power of the big mind, of the unconscious mind. So these are like the two dimensions of Zen practice. Mumon's verse. Before a step is taken, the goal is reached. Before the tongue is moved, the speech is finished. Though each move is ahead of the next, there is still a transcendent secret. So, the big mind is already always in a place of unity. The big mind is always already speaking from unity. The small mind is always in a place of dividedness. So Zen practice is about sitting on the cushion and being in the moment, and then letting the mind of unity speak and hearing what it has to say. So here we are at a beautiful session, spring session, practicing together. And perhaps we have no conflicts to work on. That would be good, so please just be in the moment and enjoy it. But perhaps, as you're sitting on the cushion, something has come up. And this is a golden opportunity to lead a deeper life, to have a deeper life, to be more in touch with your true nature. And so please practice today with your whole heart.